Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast, the round one recap of the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. I'm Greg Ducharme, joined today by Mark Immelman. Mark, what's going on?
I still laugh when you say resort and club championship. It just does not do this event justice. But anyway, we're all good. Watched a little golf this afternoon on TV. I'm looking, got my casual gear on, so all good here, man.
You know, watching, they're out there at the Dominican Corrales Golf Club, or Corrales Golf Course, actually. And when I watch golf that's played on resort golf courses with the beautiful scenery, and this happens in Hawaii too, it looks so relaxing for them out there. Yet here we are at the same time, and these guys that we're going to talk about are grinding it out, trying to do everything they can to improve their status on tour, or keep their card, or really improve their position to get to East Lake to improve on their goals on the year. So it's inside they have a real drive to compete. Yet watching it seems so relaxing, don't you think?
Really does. The thing about here, different to Hawaii that you reference, I mean, if you go there and you play the two PGA tourist stops, Kapalua, the plantation course, as far as I can remember, they're a handful of forced carries, if that. Sony is nothing. It's a beautiful sort of old school design there, just outside of Honolulu. But this place, man, yeah, I can see what you're saying, because you get there and it's a real relaxed vibe. It's the island vibe. You're next to the Atlantic Ocean there. I can imagine the resort must be incredible. But some of the views, they quickly turn from views to kind of distractions, because you're standing there on the tee, even though the fairways are wide, going, well, don't miss left, don't miss long, don't miss short, don't miss right. So, yeah, there's a certain amount of grind going on, and you could see by the afternoon wave of players coming through there. When the wind kicks up, that place can be just a beast. And whereas, you know, this evening, I'm sure they'll have a nice meal and maybe a cocktail or two. When you're on the golf course with some crosswinds, it's hardly plain sailing.
Absolutely right, Mark. And you know, I mean, the golf course is 7,666 yards on the card. So it is a long golf course, a long Tom Fazio design. And it's definitely there for beauty, but there is plenty of teeth to it. Although, not for the four players at the top of our leaderboard. Four really nice rounds of 65 from Sepp Straka, Scott Harrington, Hudson Swafford, and Tyler McCumber. Any of those rounds stick out to you, Mark? Is there a player there that you watch that you say, I knew it, or a player that maybe surprises you?
Well, I've got to reference Sepp Straka. I mean, to go around this place bogey-free, that's a pretty sporty achievement. And when we were having our one-and-done conversation, I was sort of reserved on Sepp Straka, and I actually went against him in our matchups. But that round sticks out to me when you go bogey-free. Hud Swafford, so good to see him come back. I mean, he'd been battling injury some and been working hard on the game here in the off time. But Tyler McCumber, it's always a special story to me because I'm good friends with his dad, Players Champion, multiple PGA Tour champion, and Mark McCumber. And I've watched Tiger. I sound like Mark now because, you know, Mark gives the stories like, you know, when I was watching Tyler play as a junior golfer versus Jordan Spieth and company. So I kind of giggled at him, but I've seen Tyler from when he was in college. And I remember his brother, Josh. And obviously I remember Mark as a winner on the tour. So I keep tabs on Tyler McCumber. And whenever he plays well, it gets me excited. Not just for him, because it's so hard to break through, but I know his father, Mark, must be over the moon right now, because the one thing, and I've had experience with Robert Mize, Larry Mize's son, Gary Nicklaus, Jack Nicklaus's son, and obviously the player boys. It's hard to play under a successful professional's inside of their shadow. And so to see Tyler break out, kind of be his own personality, because he's completely dissimilar to his father. I mean, he's a fascinating character. So when he jumps up on a leaderboard, I pay attention.
And this is an event where he has had some success in the past. In 2018, he went into the final round in third place. And he ended up in tied 19th, but it's still his best finish on the PGA Tour to date. So it'll be interesting to watch him throughout the week. If he's developed any scar tissue back in 2018, he may really have a chance here. And he goes off at 7:50 tomorrow morning, which may be important. As you notice, the wind did pick up a little bit, and there were still afternoon rounds, Tyler being one of them, who performed well. But you got to imagine it's a little bit easier in the morning. Do you think, Mark, or do you think it's kind of even late, early, either way?
I have not really looked at the scoring, to be honest with you. But the rule of thumb typically is that golf courses play harder in the afternoon. The winds freshen. You've had traffic on the greens for a morning and an afternoon, so that makes it challenging. And golf courses tend to get a little crispy. Now, obviously, this place won't because it's seaside and there's enough salt water, and that paspalum grass is really resilient. But still, greens get a little track to them. They get a little more bumpy. The crosswinds will freshen. And there's that immeasurable that if you've had the morning off, you know, with these guys, I'm sure they're on the beach or just chilling out and taking it easy. But then you get to the course and you see some dude shot like 7 under. You know, that can get in the back of the mind a little bit. And then you go out there sort of playing some against the score that's been posted, and it's a real challenge to kind of stick to your guns, stick to your grind, and do your thing. So from those points of view, to me, it's always a little harder in the afternoon.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, my preference would almost always be to start in the morning, I think, in a tournament. Although there's an advantage to late early if you can get off to a great start on Thursday. But in a tournament like this, where you know you're going to have to get to that 20 under mark or better to really have a chance of winning, I think getting off to a great start is really important. It was a couple years ago, and this statistic may have changed, but it was something along the lines of 73% of winners on the PGA Tour were inside the top 10 after the first round. So I do think it's really important. But what's so interesting this week, Mark, is three of the four players in Scott Harrington, Hudson Swafford, and Tyler McCumber, they all played in the afternoon today. And Sepp Straka is the only one who's going out tomorrow afternoon. So I would give a slight edge to those three players. I think those afternoon rounds are really impressive. Well, Sepp's, well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to add to, I loved your point about the late early, because if you play late early, you will pretty much have 24 hours between your Friday and Saturday tee time. And so if you need to work on the game for some reason, you have the time and you won't wear yourself out. If you want to just rest, you know, because of the early tee time, you have that luxury on Friday afternoon and you can still get a full day's work in on Saturday. Whereas if you go early, late, you know, you're practicing after Thursday, then Friday you tee off late and all of a sudden you're turning around for Saturday. So the late early tee time to me is awfully beneficial.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. If you're Sepp Straka and you're going off tomorrow at 12:40 in the afternoon, you're hoping for three consecutive afternoon rounds. You're hoping not to have to go out in the morning on Saturday, because that means that you probably didn't play so great. So it'll be interesting to watch. With the way the winds tend to blow in a tournament like this in the Caribbean, I'm very interested to see how a guy like Sepp Straka handles the afternoon tomorrow. And I'm also interested to see what Scott Harrington, Hudson Swafford, and Tyler McCumber, some really great stories. I mean, the Scott Harrington story is fantastic with everything that he and his wife went through. And he is a rookie on the PGA Tour, and he's in his 30s. So it's a rare thing. And it's a testament to the grind that these guys who are out there on the Korn Ferry Tour year after year, what kind of work they're having to put in. And now here he is on the PGA Tour for his second year and has a share for the lead heading into Friday. So it'll be very, very interesting to see. There were some other players out on the golf course, some young stars, Mark, that I think it's really important to mention. Justin Suh, was the guy. He was the other guy, basically, in the Morikawa, Wolf, and Hovland class. He shoots a 5 under par 67 on Thursday. It was a rather impressive round, I would say. 5 under, you got to think you're squarely in the mix. What do you make of this young player?
Well, I'm sure right now for Justin Suh, having watched, you know, his contemporaries to a large extent have just a bushel of success in the PGA Tour, I'm sure he's feeling a little left behind. But this is a guy who's still sort of trying to find his feet on the PGA Tour. And so he's playing with that sort of like, I've got to keep up mentality. But he came out onto the PGA Tour vastly hyped. You know, he got a lot of conversation about him. You know, us as the on-course announcing folks and the announcers and the media, you know, he was one of the names we were getting handouts on all of the time. And so I made a point of watching him, and he's got a technique that's kind of his own. He doesn't have the guns that old Hovland or Wolf does. He plays a game that's more built on precision, sort of similar to a Morikawa for argument's sakes. But I'm still trying to figure him out. So this is a beautiful start for a guy who I'm sure is like, hold on a sec, these guys are leaving me behind, and it's time for me to sort of make my way a little bit. He's had limited success. He's played down in Latino America. He shot some low scores down there, but yet to really put anything sort of special together. So I'm sure after 67 today, he must be feeling over the moon right now, and it's something to build on confidence-wise.
It's very interesting. You mentioned you consider Morikawa, Wolf, and Hovland to be contemporaries of his. And if you're in his position, you're thinking one of two different ways. Well, one, I've got to catch up. I can't believe how these guys are playing so well, and I'm so far behind. And that can be that's kind of the negative viewpoint on it. The positive is, hey, if they can do it, why not me? And it's my turn. And that's what I watch out for over the weekend. Is this guy going to believe when he gets in contention on the weekend, if he plays well tomorrow and he finds himself in the mix, hey, I believe they can do it. So can I. And that's what I'm wondering. And I think we're kind of seeing the same thing out of a player like Akshay Bhatia and Will Zalatoris. Akshay, go ahead.
I can put a bow on so real fast.
Yeah.
He played a few events in 2020. And has made only one cut, and that was in the Barracuda, that alternate field event. And missed five cuts otherwise in some of the smaller field events. So again, I think this is a real opportunity for Justin. And the thing for him now is not to get ahead of himself. Now it's just to continue to build on this. You know, realize that if I do another three of these 67s, I'm going to have a pretty good chance of being an exempt guy on the PGA Tour, and all of a sudden, all of my issues are way in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, and then in that that problem that you have, or that issue that you have, where you're wondering, do I belong, or am I way behind? Are my contemporaries just that much better than me? Those doubts get wiped away in a hurry, and you see in the victories that the victory that Colin Morikawa had, he won an opposite field event, and it really spurred on a strong career. So winning at any level, winning is winning, and winning breeds confidence. And so it could go a really long way for him. I think Akshay falls in that category too, and Will, of course. But Akshay, coming off a top 10 finish last 2 weeks ago in his last start at the Safeway Open, gets off to a solid start again today, 3 under par, 69. Mark, you look at around for a player like Akshay, and he's sitting there in this position. What's the mindset heading into Friday? Are you thinking by any stretch of the imagination you're too far back, or is he still feeling like a four back, he's squarely in the mix?
No, this is the kind of place, looking at some of the scores, where if you shoot sort of that 69, 70 sort of round, you're kind of almost right at tour average. As I say that, I'm just quickly looking through the average scores, and I see, yeah, the average score on the day was like 71, sort of right at 71.
Yeah, right about one under.
Yeah, so sort of one under. So he's ahead of the curve. And if that was his bad day, if that was his nervy day, you know, I think he's run a good lap time. So I wouldn't get rash with the game plan just now. You know, Thursday, Friday is not when tournaments get won. Thursday, Friday is when tournaments get lost. And so if he just puts together something solid in the sort of mid to high 60s tomorrow, then he's very much in position to go ahead and accelerate. And we've seen out of him that he plays that sort of game where he can get aggressive, and he does have the weapons to reach par fives and that sort of deal. So I think it's time for him to sort of stay his lane, stay patient, stay doing his thing. And then you start to reassess strategies and plans over the weekend.
You need to win an event like this. And we've seen it here specifically in the past 3 years. You see a really low round out of the winner. and probably out of everybody in the top five, they're probably all going to have one round in, over the four where they go really low, and it's something that's 65 or better. And Graham McDowell did it last year. I think he shot a 64, maybe even a 63, which is it's hugely important. So if you have a 69 on the board, even if you have a 70 on the board, like Will Zalatoris, you have to convince yourself you're still in the mix. You are not out of it. You're one really low round away. On a par 72 golf course, a 9 under par 63 can make up a ton of ground. So if you shoot a 63 and 369s, you're sitting there at 18 under, and by the time Sunday comes around, that could be enough to win. So I agree with you, Mark. I think that 69-7, it's important to get under par. Under par is critical. But going forward, you just got to stick with it and hope that one of these rounds, the putter gets really hot. I will mention Will Zalatoris. He shot a 70. Many of us here on the first cut were very interested in him, including myself.
It was Mark, in continuation after some Corn Ferry results and one good U.S. Open finish, basically is what it was.
Yeah, well, look, it's steady play. And I look at when I look at players, just to explain myself, because look, I mean, I went basically all in on Will Zalatoris. I liked him everywhere. He's the favorite, but it's confidence coming in. And I look at an event as who's playing the best entering. And I think that Will was playing the best. Now, 70 today, I'm not going to say he's out of it, but it definitely puts you in kind of that he could get himself back in the mix with a great round tomorrow, but he's also in missed cut territory. So I'll be watching what he does very closely. And I'm sure you'll be watching Mackenzie Hughes pretty closely too, no?
I will. And just to Will Zalatoris and Akshay Bhatia and company, last year's winner, Graham McDowell, shot like 70 or 71 in round one, and then shot a brace of 64s, leading himself into Sunday. So it's on, you know. But again, the thing is, you know, for a Will, who you say is playing the best, arguably coming in here, you know, we did
arguably, for sure.
You know, it wasn't, we had, you know, limited information to operate on because not everyone played in the US Open. But the thing for Will then is just to remain true to his plan. And not to panic and go, well, dang, I'm five behind or six behind, whatever. You just got to pick them off. So he will show or not show his maturity tomorrow, certainly. And because if he tries to force the issue a little bit, you can get yourself behind the eight ball pretty fast here.
Eventually, because the tour has a format where there's early, late starting times, I think you really have to wait and see where you are after your two rounds. You put your two best rounds, you do the best you can Thursday, Friday, you see where you sit heading into the weekend. And if he is mature, which is a great word, Mark, I think he'll understand that and put together a great round tomorrow. But we're going to take it to the next level here. We got to get some picks. We got to think who's going to have a great round tomorrow, who's going to go on and have a great rest of the tournament. We're going to talk about that next. But first, let's take a break and hear a word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back. Okay, Mark, it's time to put some names to the paper here. Who do you like heading into the weekend? We mentioned the players that we have at the top of the leaderboard, four players at 7 under par. Where are you thinking this? Where do you think you have to be after tomorrow's round? And is there a player that really stands out to you that you think is going to make a big move tomorrow?
I think you would be comfortable at about 12. You know, that means the few guys, there's four of them at 7. You shoot 5 under tomorrow, that's 67, then you're in good shape. There will be one or two folks, I'm guessing, that'll be lower than that. But then again, it's weather dependent, and I haven't seen the forecast. But I think if you're 12, you're comfortable. And there's a few names that sort of pop out to me a little bit. Mackenzie, you shot 4 under. That was kind of a quiet start for him. I'd picked him at the beginning of the week. But, you know, he's only 3 back right now. And then there's some fascinating names there too. I think Patrick Rogers, he's yet to fulfill kind of what he is. I mean, because in college at Stanford, he was a world beater, and he's come out here and he's adjusted his golf swing with his instructor. And I've watched him play once or twice, and he hits the ball hard, and it doesn't really go very crooked. And so if the winds blow, I feel like he will be able to really, you know, make some hay in some adverse conditions. So I'd have my eye on Rogers. And then, of course, like I said, Mackenzie Hughes, he also hits that heavy ball. And then just looking farther down the list, I mentioned Tom Dietrich, you know, leading into this event.
Yep.
He shoots four under as well. So I'll be looking to see how he goes tomorrow.
So I love that. I love the Rogers pick. Rick and I were very high on him heading in. And you mentioned how he hits the ball hard. He does. I mean, he averages 308 yards off the tee. So he is a long hitter. I think there's an advantage to that out here at this golf course. And of course, I like Mackenzie Hughes too. I think he is another one of those guys that is in great form coming into the week. The US Open, he's like maybe didn't go the way that he wants, but he's got to be riding a high of confidence, and he should be. And he played great here last year. So I love Mackenzie Hughes. The player that I'm looking at heading into tomorrow and heading into Saturday, and I think he's going to be squarely in the thick of it come Sunday, is James Hahn. James Hahn is he came in tied ninth at the Safeway Open, and you're seeing some better performance out of him. He's a guy that I look at as kind of one of those poppers. You'll see him. He's won twice on the PGA Tour in 15 and 16. He's coming second. He's got a number of top tens. He is a experienced player who hasn't really had a great run the past couple of years. So I'm looking for him. I feel like he's garnered a little bit of confidence, and his game is in a better place right now than it has been before. So when I see the round that he put up today, I think James Hahn is really a guy to watch. And he was either, I think he shot 5 under today. It might've been 4 as my leaderboard uploads here. Where is he? There he is. He shot 4 under 68 today. Mm-hmm. So just like Mackenzie Hughes, I think those are kind of sneaky rounds. I think James Hahn puts himself right there in the mix. So I love the picks. Is there any one of the leaders that you think is going to be problematic for everybody else, as Kyle would say? Is there anybody that you think might run away with this?
No, I just don't think the golf course will allow very much for that.
Yeah.
Because when you find a person running away, they've either played out of their minds, or it's been a golf course that doesn't really lend itself to some super low scores, and one person just sort of finds the elixir. You know, and you look at the scores over here, I didn't see what's cutting right now, but I know 2 under par is essentially almost on the cut line. And you've got some guys like Graham McDowell and Henrik Stenson are down there too. So no, I don't think there's one guy that's going to accelerate away from the peloton. I feel like it's going to be pretty bunched as we head into the weekend. There'll be more of the same. And then eventually, I feel like you're going to have to shoot something in the mid to low 60s Sunday to separate yourself and win.
I think you're right. That cut line right now is at 2 under. There are 76 players at 2 under or better. So it'll be very interesting to watch. There's so many players at 2 under par. It's amazing. But anyway, Mark, that's all we got for you. But we're going to be around for the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship every single round. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll do a recap on Saturday night, and we'll do a recap, of course, on Sunday night. So really looking forward to that. Thank you so much for listening or watching. If you're on YouTube, I'm Greg Ducharme. You can get me on Twitter at TheRealGFD. That's Mark Immelman. He's at Mark_Immelman. That's it for us tonight, and we'll see you next time.
chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.